organization, association. A year after, no, 19, that was in 1969, I think, we decided to form our organization.
The organization is?
Yes.
What's the name of the organization?
Alaska Heritage Writers Association. And non-profit, too.
Maybe we should begin with why you started the association.
What did you mean what you said?
Maybe, can you explain why you started the association?
Well, because our Eskimo Indian Aleut Yupik history was phasing out from Native students' philosophy. You know, like, I'll give you an example. My book, called Grandfather of Unalakleet, is the first one. It's oral history of Unalakleet, Alaska. And that's an example, and that's one reason why I wrote it, so that it'll be an example for the writers to use. And now it's finished, and we hope to put it in somewhere. We don't have an office yet, but we hope to have an office in Greening Building.
Is the association through the university?
No, it's our own idea. Mm-hmm. It didn't come from, well, we learned something about your philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
You usually keep records of your background, mm-hmm. and why not the Native people learn to do the same as yours? University is a place where we learn to live and do things for ourselves. And sometimes our ideas are usually do not become reality, you know. But now we have all of our members are professionals. Some are teachers, some are, they have their field of work, which has been certified by graduating from University of Alaska or other universities in other states. And so the reason we decided to have members in that status of a person, because if our members were or didn't know how to do any data work, you know, work historically and academically as well. And that was our objective, was to write the histories of the villages and our philosophies that are not written. And for instance, one woman suggested now, after we get the information on the villages of Alaska, Native villages, we will have data where scientists or doctors or welfare workers can go to an office and look into the content of our oral history of that village and its people, the population, how many schools they have, the kind of natives, which language they use for speech, and many other, knowledge that they would know and expect to before they go into villages and do some work with the native people. I think this is valuable. I think it should be part of University of Alaska. I am working toward it with the others. And this is not solely my idea, but I'm the instigator, you know what I mean. Just to
include. Is it made up of Alaska Native?
Yes, Alaska Native.
How did you come up with the LAMP project, and what does it represent?
It represents the whole Native Alaskans. They too can identify themselves in the future. They know how to identify themselves now, I think, but I'm not sure of that statement. But I think eventually some may not know who they are, you know, or what tribe they belong to, and then they can look in the files and find out. We will have a list of copy of the census of the Native people in our files. We will try to have a rounded information of data regarding our cultures of Alaska, which is needed. We never did have any of that informational bureau, you know.
What's the philosophy behind the lamp, Emily?
Philosophy behind the lamp, it is imbued, or the philosophy comes from the Eskimo people. They had to have light eventually in their homes. And you know the conditions. It's dark living in during the, is it 5 or 6 months of the year. And naturally they had to have light in order to live. And it isn't just the lamp itself to light the darkness in their being in igloos. It is also a heat, source of heat in their home. And it is also a source of a stove where they could cook on there, and also a source of water. They melt their water by through the heat of this lamp. The lamp is always on. It's never extinguished to go to sleep. They also dry their clothes above the lamp. So it's everything. That's good philosophy of lamp. And it should be duplicated somewhere in educational institution whereby they could identify themselves with this lamp. And our motto or a symbol heading of our literature or paper or letter, you know, is thy word is a lamp unto my feet. And also thy light. Oh no, in the first part I must correct it. Did I say light or did I say lamp? Yeah, that's right. And in the second part, and it is a light unto my path. It is so much like our way of life. We have to have light in order to exist in the darkest part of the world during the winter. And it is also, it gives us happiness to see light somewhere. If you had to live in a dark place and you didn't have light in that igloo, you wouldn't know where to go. You would just stand still and probe and find your way to move around. And so it was important that our native people have this lamp. And the if you want a copy of the origination of the Eskimo lamp, I have it. And it's going to be printed and placed down there by this lamp that's being installed. And how a man originated the lamp. Explanation of it.
Oh, what's that? How did that originate?
You mean the lamp originated? I would rather that you would. I'll give you a copy.
Yeah, but how about this one? What did it belong in this one? Where did the rock come from?
Oh, the history. I thought I brought a paper. The rock came from the army, local Fairbanks army. Now, I can't say which army or which, I would have to find out where we got this. It's in the records. It's given to us free by the army and brought here by them.
How did you go about getting the lamp?
So that's a $64 question. I went to every office on the campus, tried to get permission if we could do this. And the people here, Dr. Hyatt, gave us the permission to install it. And then I think did I give you the list of people who contributed? We wrote to every Chamber of Commerce members in state of Alaska and asked them to give us some help, financial help, you know, and they were good enough to send us some money. The largest contribution we got was from Celesta Corporation down in Yukon area. It's surprising. And you know, those people don't work like they do here in the interior. They don't have any work, but the corporation had the money. You know how much they sent? $500. That's $500,000. And Mrs. Brown, Emily Brown, went everywhere to try to gave speeches and talked to people to see if they were interested, especially the natives. And so I appreciate. However, I'm sad to say that the rest of the corporations did not send any contribution, but I think it was partly my fault. I will have to remind them again hereafter. And this will partly, I think, be a joint maintenance will be given by us, the AWA group, and the University of Alaska. At least they provided us with the first gasoline. Is it gas or what type of fuel? Yeah, propane, uh-huh. And we appreciate their interest in this.
Can you describe the lamp?
The lamp? It is sitting on a big rock. It is about maybe 5 feet tall, and I don't know how wide it is. And it's circular shape. And then the lamp will be sitting on top. It is now mailed. It will be here within a week's time, and they will soon install it. The lamp is in the shape of original Eskimo lamp of Inupiaq people, Inupiaq Eskimos, Seward Peninsula. Of course, some lamps don't have the same shape in certain areas, you know. They have, now the Aleut people's lamp is round, and our lamp is in oblong, a circular shape, half of a circle in that shape, you know. And it could have one long stretch light, or you could have just a, the wick is from the certain kind of a moss that they pick on the tundra. It's not compact moss that grows in circular shape, and it's dry. And that's the kind of wick that they usually have for their lamp. And it's amazing how it doesn't burn out. You know, and the native people are not, I consider them natural, to be natural scientists. The Eskimo people, because they have had to find natural material to help them to live in such conditions. And they didn't go to school to learn something about these kinds of mosses that grow, you know. They knew what kind of moss to use for wick, the lamp. And they used seal oil for fuel, to light it. But not two kinds of seal oil. One is rendered seal oil, and then the other is blubber. The northern Eskimos use the blubber. They put it right next to the light, the heat, and then it just oozes out to replenish the used oil that's been being burned. And so it's amazing they also knew what to use, because of the fact that in the north they don't usually have time to render the oil like we do in Seward Peninsula. We don't use blubber in Seward Peninsula. People don't eat that. The seal oil is eaten by the people there after they render it. And then in the north, they eat the frozen blubber. And so they use the frozen blubber to place it for heating the light.
What's the dedication ceremony going to be like?
Dedication program, you will read, and I'll try to get a copy for you soon.
How much do you know about it so far?
Can you say just briefly?
The opening will be given by Dr. Hyatt, welcoming Dr. Hyatt, and then there will be two speakers, an introduction of the people that are sitting up, you know, together, to the program, people that are going to speak or do something else. And then after these two speakers, one will be Willie Hensley, and he will represent the native Eskimos of Alaska. John Sackett will represent the Indians of Alaska. And after they give their speeches individually, then Dr. Cross will give responses. He will talk Eskimo language, Indian language, whichever one he wants to speak, I think Athabascan and Iyak language, and possibly Tlingit. And he will speak the responses in Eskimo language, possibly in English language too. And then after he's through, then a man, the champion, high-kicking champion by name of Jewel, Reggie Jewel, will come running in to light the lamp. And and then after that, it's been requested that I sing Kobuk love song. An Eskimo good man, no like him fight, making plenty mucklucks and sell him to the white. He loyal and Tom Cot, catch him in a hole, ask good cow cough for the Eskimo. Well, you see, they have the blubber too, you know, for cow cow. You know what a cow cow is? Food. That's a historical word. And the British pioneer miners didn't know how to express themselves, so they invented that word cow-cow for both cultural people, Indians and Eskimos. And so and then after that is over, and then well, I'll sing songs, and then what else was it that was on the program? Then Amarok, Oliver Amarok and his crew will do the music, Eskimo music, and everybody will dance. All the participants and guests will do the dancing. And then after that is the closing, and we'll have refreshments in common, upper common.
What time?
It'll be 5 o'clock in the afternoon when we will assemble to receive the guests. And within half an hour, we'll possibly begin the program. It'll be short.
And what day?
July 29th at 5 in the afternoon. And from there, the crowd will go to the opening of the Olympics. By the way, I forgot to mention Mrs. Ramos will be one of the speakers too, and responses. She is she and the chairman of the dedication is and myself, and three of us is Mrs. Gustafson, Daphne Gustafson.
How did the idea for the park come about? The place?
Yeah,
it's an entire park that the land.
Yes, it's the entire park, because eventually we're going to move Totem Pole right by the Eskimo lamp, and Yancy said it's too late this year. They will eventually move it, because that's going to be the, what would be the name of it now? Native, not native park, but their fancy name, anthropological.
Heritage Park?
Yes. Heritage Park. But then some are thinking of changing it again. But then at present time it's called the Native or Heritage Park of the University of Alaska.
If you were to invite someone to this event in your native tongue, how would you say it?
We are going to do it in native tongue too.
But could you give me an invitation now on the tape recorder in your native tongue to invite people to come?
I could. You mean while I'm talking to this? That would be in Inupiaq language, wouldn't it? nan nimon ilik kangat nun kayu mausi July 29, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Nan nimun ilik kangat nun kayu mausi. I'll write it for you if you want me to.
Okay. I wanted your voice to say
it. Oh.
So, was that all of it?
Yeah, that's all. Nan nimun ilik kangat nun kayu mausi university moon. July 29th, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And that's it. Nan nimun ilik kangat nun kayu mausi university moon. July 29th. 1976, 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Was the park conceived at the same time as the lamp project?
No, it was conceived a year afterwards. And then we had to get permission from University of Alaska to install it. After we planned what it would be.
The lamp was came after the park?
After the, no, the park is originated same time as our lamp is installed.
It was all one project?
Yes, it's all one project. The other project of the lamp, they have given us that space down here for a park. Eventually we'll get chairs so that the students can come. And the philosophy behind it, the main philosophy behind this origination of the lamp on the campus, when I had to explain to the administration when they met here, Dr. Beislein was in charge at that time of the administration here. And the reason I said to them was this. The native students, when they come to University of Alaska, they cannot identify themselves in any way about their culture or who they are. Everything is done in the way University of Alaska is built. It has to be. The reason that we thought that we would install this lamp is to represent something about their philosophy of life in their rugged home country in the north. And in this manner, if they see their lamp lit and is lighted, you know, they will know that they have a part in this lamp which would encourage them to be who they are and how they could be identified themselves. And this would give them warmth at the university instead of being, not have any part of their philosophy shown on the campus. And that's the philosophy of the lamp. And it went strong. And then you wonder why, you educators wonder why the native students fail and become discouraged because none of their philosophy is shown on the campus. And this will be the first time in any university of the United States that something of our way of life will be shown. And hereafter, the students ought to become affiliated or become part of the life of University of Alaska, especially. And for that reason, we feel that we should put up something to show their identity or heritage, you know. And this would help them to belong to university as students and want to continue with their studies. And its art is beautiful. The art of the, of the lamp is beautiful.
Who created the lamp? Who did the design of the lamp?
I designed the lamp when I took course, under Mr. Selinsky helped me a lot. And I wasn't interested in contemporary artwork in the ceramics department. I kept searching for something valuable. And so I worked with Mr. Selinsky, and he suggested that I make this lamp, small lamp, and put it in a pottery work and sell it. You know, we have sold over, I don't know how many thousands we've sold from this lamp, the representative of the same lamp we are putting on them here. But I told them that I didn't want the money. At first I was selling them at $25 a piece, depending on the size. But I turned the whole thing over to the Pottery Works of University of Alaska, and there is a scholarship now. I don't know how much it is, but this scholarship fund that is given to the University Pottery Works, it will be given to the ceramic department, and it will be given to the student who wants to pursue the artwork at the ceramics, I mean work with the ceramics, whatever it is. And so we could ask Ida to see how much they have now. I only get the 10% royalty from it.
Is the lamp out here designed after the one you designed?
Yes, and the design was bigger. From this former one that I made, the little design. Stewart Peninsula lamp of the Eskimos and the Northern people too.
Did you say how heavy this lamp will be?
The model is not too heavy. I don't know how heavy it will be, but it certainly, if it's heavy enough, the rock will hold it up. It will be on the rock. I don't know what you call it. What would you call it?
What?
A rock. There's a name for it. Mm-hmm. Post or...
like a support.
Support. The support.
What is metal is the lamp made of?
It is made out of, I don't know, but I'm sure it is made out of some metal that will not tarnish or be washed away by the weathering, you know. But you could ask Larry Copper knows what metal is made of.
Larry
Copper. Hopper.
Yeah, Hopper.
Yeah, he's down here. If you want to know a little bit more about information on it, because I turned the whole thing over, we turned the whole thing over to Dr. Moyer's office, and I want you to be sure and mention that Dr. Moyer and Larry Hopper have been real good friends of ours, and they were the ones to accept the idea of that they would do the establishing of the lamp and workmanship of the lamp. And this is on basis of expenses of university. It's a joint affair with the University of Alaska. So it is an don't give the credit to all of us, to the members of our group. It is also give honor to University of Alaska, and their attitude is wonderful. You know, they didn't think of how much it would cost to put it up or anything. But we got a few dollars over from the Chamber of Commerce and people who were interested in acquiring material goods, natural resources, you know, to pay for a lamp or something like this, and just anything, expenses of the lamp to put it up. I was so impressed with people. You know, when the first thing that I received was $1 from a woman down in Southeastern Alaska, and oh, that was the beginning of the rolling of the help that we were getting, and the largest, of course, was 500, and I won't mention how much different ones gave, but all in all, it was value to us. You'd be surprised how Americans are the most congenial and most unselfish people so far as donations are concerned, you know, in America and Alaska. They're always willing to support something good to raise the morale of students on the campus or elsewhere. And
how does the lamp represent those Indians and Eskimos?
Because the Indians have the same kind of light. They use seal oil and wick to light it. But of course they're in different shapes according to their cultural arts.
But all the natives don't use seal oil.
Not anymore now.
Well, no, but what did the Athabascans do?
Seal oil. And sometimes,
yes,
because they're close to the Arctic. That's where they used to have trading long ago, and they can buy the seal oil from the Eskimos.
They traded for
meat, dried meat, or moccasins, or something like this. They had trading customs, and you could use any oil, but seal oil does not give too much smoke. But the animal fat does, like a moose fat, for instance, gets a lot of smoke. So I guess it's valuable to the native Indian people in the interior to buy the seal oil from the Eskimo people. Historically, Eskimos prevented Indian people from moving into their midst because this would do away with their trading, and they didn't want them to hunt down in the sea. They wanted that priority of ownership. And that's why there isn't a single Indian race that has established their homes, except the Iyak down in Pacific Ocean, not the Cape, but the Prince of Wales Sound. Is it Prince of Wales? Down in Cordova area. And so, it's amazing when you think of it. How did they had wars. They prevented the Indian people from coming into the land. So they were, in the past, historically, they were enemies. But it's been about possibly 200 or 500 years now since they became friendly towards each other. The trading caused it to do away with the hatred for each other. So they didn't have any wars. Read my book and you'll find out the last war at Unalakleet happened. None of the professionals want to read my book. They get bored reading. I don't know whether it's the language that I use or whatever it was. None of the professionals buy it. How come? It's an attitude of people, I think. Ah, this old book is written by an Eskimo. You know how they talk. I kind of think that's the reason. I don't include that. Don't include that in the radio. It's a different subject. I just want you to laugh a little bit. Me, the whole credit. Please give my members. I couldn't do a thing without their help, you know. And they gave valuable contributions when we planned this project. So give the honor to our group. I would prefer that you would. We have 25, almost 30 members. And we are not too active because every member is placed in the different villages. And they're trying very hard to finish their writing. But we are asking for funding from Washington, the United States, not from Alaskan places where you get funding. It's too small. 6,000 is too small. That's the highest in Alaska that you can get from funding. We want it from something like Ford Foundation or Humanities and the Forum. And where we could get, we'll have to do a high-class advertising, I guess, in order to get funding in that manner. Even AFN might give us partly, and we might have to ask this and that, you know, and then eventually get more than someone said in our group, possibly $25,000 or more, because this wouldn't, it would continue on. We cannot write the history of 114 villages in Alaska that's only the Eskimo people, but not the Indians. I don't know how many villages they have in the interior, but this is only Eskimo count. So we are destined to write the history or history of every village in Alaska, and that will take money, you know, to support us if our riders should travel.
You have those Indians and
Eskimos and Indians, Eskimo villages in it, and Indian villages whole. But I should think possibly it's interesting. We could do research and find out how many villages the Indian people have. There are 14 tribes in Alaska. And so there should be less villages. I don't know. And also we intend to do our own map, an Eskimo map, to provide information. And take off, which is ghost town. Many of these in our contemporary map, it's misleading. You think that some of these are ghost towns, and we want to specify this is a ghost town, no one lives here, and so forth. And anything that has to do with the education of Native high school children, they will do the map, will give a context to the high school students, and you have to select the best one and give them award for doing the math. These are the future things that we intend to do.
Can we go back to the lamp for a minute down there?
Yes.
What at the dedication, are the people going to be wearing traditional clothes, and is it going to be a
We're asking possibly the two speakers to wear their costumes, and then to our members, if they have time, like what I'm wearing, you know, it's nice to wear, depending on whether they have it or not. Yes, Eskimo parka. I might have to borrow a beautiful princess hat, because I belong to the Unalakleet tribe. My mother is the niece of the chief, and I think I'm a princess, but no one knows it. Or am I a duchess? I don't know. But many of our people at Unalakleet and Kuru Peninsula, they're too poor to travel, you know, but we're going to pay the transportation for the speakers and arrange for their.
What about the dancing? Is there going to be an actual dance group?
Well, it could be, but Oliver Amarok will be in charge. And he will, and possibly Barrow. We might even ask Barrow Orchestra to come up to join us to do that. I think it's interesting with Eskimo music, you know.
This is officially opening the Eskimo Indian Olympics?
Yes. It's the part of the opening of Eskimo Olympics. And I think Mr. Kennedy, do you know Mr. Kennedy? I don't know his first name.
Definitely.
Yes, we are making arrangements with him. And as soon as possible, Mrs. Ramos is partly responsible for local permission to use this and that. And I think Dr. Cutler is right with her when we had our meeting. Though he has tendency to complain a little bit about the expenses, but you know how old folks are. But don't put that in the news. And then the map will be included in the newspapers, so you'll know where to go. And we're going to have, what do you call these people who direct you to sit here and there? Ushers. We'll have Ushers University, our members, and then Hopple is in charge of the lay setting of the people. They are not going to be permitted to run around. We might have to put 500 or 700 chairs if necessary, so that the children will not ransack the beautiful trees and things like that. And he wants that to be sure. Be taken care of by our group. I don't blame him, because it's a new park. They planted some trees, different kinds of trees, and all we have is flowers around the rock part. But eventually we will plant alder willows, because alder willow is a respected willow of native people. They use it for paint or some tanning, what have you, to tan the skins with. And it has it's a tree that we don't destroy culturally. We started with the ptarmigan willow, but it didn't adjust itself to this climate, so we just did it away with it. At first, we had planned to use the willow, ptarmigan willow.
Mm-hmm.
This would be another story about the ptarmigan willow. We were also disappointed. I brought willows from Unalakleet, and what I should have done was to bring willows from the interior, and they didn't adapt themselves to the climate, warm climate of University of Alaska climate, because these were grown in the humid weather in Unalakleet, so they just dried up.
What about the food?
That's a $64 question. We'll have cool drinks and small container of coffee or tea, maybe iced tea, and some, you call it a, to serve in a punch bowl. And then to fill the punch bowl, we'll have great big container of cool drinks for the public. And then we'll have, I'm trying very hard to get dried fish, so that you or someone, and then we'll have a dip, Eskimo ice cream dip. But it will not be made. We don't have steel oil here, so we'll use Wesson oil to make the Eskimo ice cream. And then we will possibly have two kinds, one without blueberries and one with the blueberries. And it'll be served in big trays, cut up dried fish. And I'm going to try to get this dried fish as soon as I can from Unalakleet. And I'll call long distance and ask to buy the fish. And I think this is tentative plan for eating. We want it primitive, you know, not in a sense in food too, because your canopies, is that the way you pronounce those dear little things that you eat? We're not going to have those because it's not becoming to the native opening of the land. So we're going to serve native food. And we have yet to plan for that, but I must call Unalakleet today to order this food. Be fresh dried fish. Mainly pink salmon. You know what pink salmon is?
Mm-hmm.
It's a humpback fish, and that's our favorite dried fish. And if anyone would like to provide us with dried meat, and it should be there too, but I don't know where we could get dried meat, not unless the Indians provide us with that. I don't think the Indians have it, not in Fairbanks anyway. So this is it, I guess.
I don't have any questions. Have a 50% increase and this and that, or we're not going to satisfy. They said, look, you got yourself in a situation. May not be very smart, but that's where you are. And you got yourself in a situation, and what we're really pressing for now is reasonable treatment, but we're getting a little less patient with not being up to at least a comparable position, not being up to a comparable position with of income with our colleagues in the lower 48.
Okay, so I just have one more thing.
I
haven't really answered. How do you view your job here? What do you think? Why are you here?
Oh, well, I'm here because I see a, first I'm here because of the people.
Yeah, which you went into in the beginning, but
yeah.
How do you see the job?
What's no. Oh, in the job.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
It seems to me that in the job, that big thing, big opportunity that lies for us is the improved use of the resource,